to the Better Golf Podcast, powered by Wynn Daily Sports, where bettors go to bet better. Here are your hosts, Tee Off Sports and Sticks Picks.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to Better Golf Podcast, the home of all things Jason Day and Webb Simpson, but also the location where you will find one of the hottest gamblers in the space at this moment in Nick Bretwish. You could argue part of that answer stems from no longer taking my bait when it comes to Day and Simpson Weekly, but anyone who tuned into the show last week will remember that even though I was relatively high compared to the rest of the market on Siwoo Kim, I'm not sure there were many people in this industry with the amount of exposure Nick had for the week in various outlets. First off, congratulations on that great call. And second, I feel like it's a weekly occurrence where you have a low-owned contrarian golfer go off for you, man. How do you keep doing it week after week?
As good as it was, it hurt because I ended up going 50% Jordan. So on the tweet that was right before I added more Jordy, who else missed a cut for me? I think Hubbard, right? I had a lot of Hubbard. Yeah. Let me see what else with the player pool. So like everything that went wrong, Siwoo saved it. So I didn't have that good of a week by any means because I have rarely had any six of six. I think I had, out of the 150 that I made, only six or seven did. So horrible percentile there, but you didn't need to be that good to be good last week, if that makes sense. But yeah, well, low owned Siwoo. It seems like anytime I'm on him when he's low owned, it's great. But I really like the course setup for him. The putting was getting better. I didn't think it'd be nearly as good as it was last week. I don't think anybody did. But the ball striking was there, and I guess if you get great ball striking and a hot putter, you're going to win an event. That's pretty much how golf works. So yeah, shout out to Siwoo. I'm kind of pissed I didn't get there pre-market or pre-tournament on the outright. Got there after the first round. I think I got 12 to 1 and then 16 to 1 after the second day. So he had a really good weekend. But yeah, I mean, I was just so heavily invested in DFS, and I think I literally talked about it like my week would go as good as Siwoo goes. And up top with the Fade and Sungjae, like I felt like I should have got rewarded for that. But I exchanged Sungjae with Tom Kim, and he missed a cut. And obviously what Jordy did, I don't know. I don't know how the hell that happens. He was tied for the lead, first round leader tied, and then misses the cut is unbelievable. I guess Keegan Bradley's done that based on some of the Twitter memes that I saw over the weekend. Fade and Cam Davis didn't hurt. So it is just kind of a crapshoot, though. There were so many random names on the leaderboard Saturday and Sunday. So I don't know. I don't really like that event. But again, like a guy with win equity won that tournament. So I don't think it's as hard as people think that tournament is a handicap. But a lot of randomness for sure.
Yeah, I'll very quickly recap my week. I don't have a ton that I want to say. So like, I mean, for the most part, the Sony Open was a prime example of me making an absolute mess of what probably should have resulted in an outright win. My numbers believed that Siwoo was a top 10 win equity option in the field, but it was one of those situations where I overexposed my card up front with some names that shouldn't have been included. And it resulted in me leaving Kim off as the first name that didn't make my wagers because of those errors. So, I mean, just very quickly to run through what I had last week, I had Connors at 28 to 1, more or less okay with that price that I got there. We talked about that a little bit either on this show or the Action Network show. That number had fallen down to 22 to 1. I think 28 was a good price, even though I did have negative upside for him when I ran my numbers that way. Emiliano Grillo at 50 to 1, that went in the reverse direction. We kind of knew that that was going to take place. Yeah. I have no problem with the Smalley play at 60 to 1. I think that was fine. But then really the problem came into play when you look at Grayson Sig, Justin Suh, Russell Knox. Those were probably the main culprits, since each had win equity returns around or outside the top 20 for me, which technically is okay, and it's only okay because we got the right price of value, but it created such a mistake when it bypassed a top 10 win equity option like Siwoo Kim, who one was projecting as a 40 to 1 golfer with value at his price, and two did so by grabbing golfers that were only selected because of the general mispricings around them. It's kind of funny. You can make the same reverse of that answer when I took Adam Svensson at the RSM at 160 to 1, but the main difference there was that I didn't have alternative spots that I wanted to go near the tops. Kind of unfortunate. I ended up losing 1.50 units. The majority of that came down to the in-tournament wagers for me. And I don't really have that much of a concern with those. Like, I beat most of those lines by 20 or 30 points. That's really all you can ask for. It's just the play didn't come in for whatever reason. I think you have players that are getting into their season right now, and for whatever the reason is, they just didn't hit. But I'm not really that panicked. Like, it hasn't been the greatest first 2 weeks for me, but I have no reason to expect that I wouldn't be able to rebound. Maybe it's not going to happen this week because I don't love this card a ton, but maybe if we're looking at the Farmers Insurance and on, there's going to be a lot of good spots coming up here.
Yeah, I think honestly, based on our history too, the weeks that we seem to like the least, we do well on. Maybe it's the over or the paralysis by over analysis on tournaments we do like. And then like this week, I've maybe spent like weighting everything and trying to figure out what I actually care about probably 1 hour. And most tournaments is like half of my Monday is trying to fine tune it to get the rankings in the way that I think are one close to the market, but two like different enough to where I think I have a little bit of an edge, especially on, you know, betting the top 40 market. That's kind of where I start with to make sure I have an edge there somewhere. And when I don't, I kind of just move on, and those weeks seem to pay off the best. But yeah, I don't know. I'm interested to talk about this week. I think DFS is going to be very interesting just because there's so much lack of data on these three courses. Yeah. But I don't know. I think I'm in a good spot. I think it's a great week just to continue to play the ownership game. And all these metrics that everybody's using, like the sample size is weird. I'm not going to say it's small because, you know, some people use 2 years. You use a lot, I think, last 6 months and last 24 rounds. I kind of use a lot more. It's weighted, I guess, over the last year for me and then the last 30 days or 30 rounds, I should say. I'm sorry. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. So I don't know. I'm talking in circles here, but I think it's going to be a really good week to get different in DFS and in the betting market. This is the most outrights I've ever had, probably, I guess, tied for with six. And I only have two top 40s and I'm kind of just going to move on. I think this is a week where currently I only have 2.08 units at risk, one whole unit being used in the outright market. And then I'm saving, you know, about a full unit for matchups that you write because those seem to be just be on fire in your play of the week. So I'm going to wait for that. And then other than that, maybe a unit or two for live market betting and then keep this sub five risk for me and just move on.
I'm excited to hear your outright wagers. I guess let's move into the tournament this week. The one thing I will say before we talk about this course is, and I guess let's talk about this right now. So I think a lot of people this week are going for DFS to take a stars and scrubs approach. I think you brought up a really good point when you talked about ownership in a nutshell there. I prefer the boom or bust mentality with it. So what that means to me is, you know, you have certain golfers, like you could look at a Taylor Pendrith, a Harris English. You have these guys, maybe Thigal. I know you're off of him this week from what I've seen, but there's
I'm always off him.
Yeah, I am too, but I kind of like him a little bit this week. But I think you have a lot of players that are, you know, 4%, 5%, 6% where all the ownership is condensing to the same areas. And I think there's a way to get unique to where you don't necessarily need to take that stars and scrubs approach. I think the $6,000 section is extremely weak this week. That's one of the reasons why I don't want to find myself down there if I can avoid it. And if it means that I can take this approach of, you know, Scottie Scheffler at the top is going to be a contrarian route to take. I always like Scottie Scheffler, but you could go Scottie Scheffler and Pendrith and, you know, Harris English. And all of a sudden you have three options there that are just so contrarian and outside the box. I prefer going that route than the stars and scrubs mentality. I don't know if you have a similar thought process to that or anything different.
Yeah, it's interesting. I do like one guy in the 6K range, and it's a complete gamble. So I'm very well expecting for my single entry to be 5 or 6 at best. But yeah, boom or bust, I guess, is 100% the way that I would write it. But there's a lot of win equity in the 8K range and even the high 7K yeah. range where I think you could make a strong, well-rounded lineup that I think will be plenty different because for the most part, and we'll get into pricing and everything like that, people are going to take one, if not try to force two of John Rahm and Cantlay, and then likely another 9K guy, like probably Sungjae Im, I'm sure is going to be super high owned. Actually, right now it's not. Willie Z, and then Cameron Young, I think, is the highest owned player in the tournament right now, according to the aggregates that I pulled. But I think that is probably going to be the way people start their builds, at least from a single entry standpoint. For 150, you get a ton of crazy stuff. Because like the optimal last week, you left 5K on the board, I think, so. It's and no one's going to do that. So you're not going to hit the optimal most likely again this week. But yeah, I don't know. I think I'm fine if like the highest priced golfer. I mean, I love we'll talk about the DFS board in a minute, but I'm okay if the highest price guy in my lineup was a 9K guy.
Yeah, I would be fine, I think, with that also. I do like Scheffler. I think he adds a contrarian route to this.
That's my guy too. And Spino also.
I actually tend to really like the $10,000 group, but let's talk about the course and we'll move there in a second. So we get a 3-course rotation that includes the Stadium Course, La Quinta, and Nicholas Tournament Track. But as everyone knows by now, these are the events that I tend to dislike from a model building perspective. Nick, before I move to you and ask how you handled this unique setup, I do want to note that the field will be required to take on each of the 3 venues between Thursday to Saturday, resulting in an abnormal 54-hole cut. It's one of the reasons why I think people are going to go stars and scrubs. And then this pro-am nature that prolongs rounds. If all of that isn't bad enough, the removal of stat tracker only amplifies the model building dilemma. Since we're flying blind whenever a golfer tees it up on the Nicholas or La Quinta courses, I'm still deciding how I will approach this regarding in-tournament wagers for that reason. But it does tie our hands a little in how we construct our cards. Anyone who makes the cut will play the Stadium Course for the second time on Sunday. But there is a lot to try and unpack here for this tournament. The last 5 winners have been Hudson Swafford, 23-under, Siwoo Kim, 23-under, Andrew Landry, 26-under, Adam Long, 26-under, and John Rahm, 22-under. While I realize that's mostly a list of long shot victors outside of Rahm and Kim, I'm not sure how much we can derive from that since we have never had a quality of field as strong as this season. So with all of that being said, I guess I have a 2-part question for you above anything else, Nick. 1, how did you handicap this board in your model? And 2, were you able to find anything unique that you used?
Honestly, I think I'm one of the few that is really heavy on driving distance. I feel like you can get a lot more, strong proximities if you're closer to the hole here. The 50 to 100 range, I weighted pretty heavily. And then driver accuracy, too. I think you got to hit a lot of fairways. That's one of the reasons I'm off the gala. But looking at how people won this tournament year after year, it's like it's a new makeup for every single golfer. There's been some short porch guys that have won this event. John Rahm obviously won this event, and he's a really long player. Just a lot of difference, and that's kind of where it's like I kind of don't care when I started to grade all of the overall, like the history and everything. It seems like guys that hit the fairway and hit it longer than tour average seem to be in a position to finish like top 40, because that's honestly what I care about the most, and getting 6 of 6 players through the cut in my DFS line. Putting is obviously going to be huge. I say this all the time, like I weight putting at every tournament because you have to make putts to win. And obviously in DFS, you want the winner. We all know that and everything, but you need to make putts to survive and make the cut too. So I want longer hitters is kind of what I'm looking at, but guys that are long and hit the fairway. So that's obviously why I love, you know, Scottie Scheffler, Tony Finau, John Rahm's going to be a great play too. I probably won't get there, but yeah, that's where I'm at. So I think I got a little bit different because I haven't really talked or heard people talk about driving distance, setting yourself up off the tee, accuracy, and obviously everybody's going to talk about putting because John Rahm's quotes, but approach game is going to be huge. It's just I want long, accurate ball strikers, if that makes sense, to summarize a 2-minute ramble.
I like that answer. Now, I did include distance. Maybe I'll go through and try to add a little bit more than what I originally added to the equation of it, but
TPI history as well. I know we always talk about that, but that matters. I think how we uncovered TPC Lee, like guys that play well on Pete Dye courses play well on Pete Dye courses. That's a thing.
It is for sure. And I've given this answer before, but I think, and it kind of goes with what you just said too. I think the biggest mistake we can make during these outlier weeks is by overcomplicating the process. Yep. You kind of mentioned it yourself, Nick, where the rollout over data hasn't exactly been predictive since each course demands something different. You don't have to look any further than how challenging it can be on a typical week to identify just one stop. And even if there might be a specific skill set that's better suited to find success, the most manageable approach stems from emphasizing the parallels between the properties and then trying to go from there. We see some of that come to fruition when we dive into the par 72 and sub 7,200 core of all 3 stops. And one of the major corollaries between all 3 properties originates on the ease to score on these 4 par 5s that you're going to get at each location. Golfers that have been able to demonstrate an edge on those holes have typically been the ones who have catapulted themselves up the leaderboard. Although your success will probably still come down to how you handle the Stadium Course and the 9 holes with water that comes into play. Some combination of total driving is probably a good place to start. I went a little bit more towards the accuracy than distance thing. I'm going to go back and see what happens when I add distance to the equation. But essentially, I'm trying to avoid golfers that are going to bring in that tournament ending danger because of all the water that comes into play at the stadium. And then the extensive bunkering can make finding fairways imperative, especially when you realize that locating the short grass here produces around the highest birdie percentages on tour yearly. So I started my model with 50% of my total stretching between three separate categories of par three, four, and five scoring. Each section highlighted the main factors that came into play when I extrapolated the historical data, and it generated this super condensed outlook that tried to simplify the process of finding success for these three courses. The 50% mark was distributed based on the expected scoring impact of the hole. So my model seemed to believe that 42% of the scoring impact would take place on the par fives, 27% on the par fours, and 31% on the par threes. To roll that into math, that would make sense for my build. It ended up equaling a 21% weight on par fives. That's what you see in my model currently. 13% on par fours and 16% for par threes. Just to go into that a little bit more, I know that's already a lot of information there, but the par three numbers took a split of par three scoring, bogey avoidance, sand save percentage, and weighted par three proximity. So all of that gets rolled into the 13 or the 16% that I put in the par threes there. The par fours looked into more of the anticipated proximity zones for these holes, a compilation of the par four ranges that we're going to get, total driving and GIR percentage out of fairway bunkers. And then the par fives took a very basic par five birdie or better number and merged it with aggression of going for these greens in two shots. That enhanced proximity from under 100 yards and over 200 yards since it accounted for that all out attack mentality. I did weighted off the T plus approach for 15%. That also looked into the historical dispersions between how those two categories impacted scoring over the years. And then it equally weighed it to the tune of 66.5% approach and 33.5% off the tee. I kind of have already said this already, but the accuracy was a 2x impact over distance with the way I weighted in my model. And then I finished it by placing individual 17.5% weights on Pete Dye plus Nicholas courses. I got unique with the way that I built that together. So essentially, I ended up going 3/4 of the number there on Pete Dye. I went 1/4 on the Nicholas design. I think the Pete Dye is the way that I would rather have my weight there. And then 17.5% on strokes gained total on short and easy courses. Those categories kind of provide you your basic expectation of what to expect when we don't know what we're actually trying to find. It's the answer that I've given a lot of times over the last 6 months, and it just keeps coming into play when you get these wonky setups. When you put all of that together, I got a top five in overall rank of Patrick Cantlay, Scottie Scheffler, John Rahm, Tony Finau, and Sung J.M. That's going to be pretty standard no matter how you want to shake it, but anything you want to add to that, Nick? I think everything I just said there made sense. If there's anything that you want to clear up on your end from what I said, go for it. But if not, where did you differ when you built your model?
No, I love it. The 200 plus means a lot. So yeah, it seems like you're kind of on the same thing, long, accurate ball strikers and people who can make putts. But, you know, obviously that matters everywhere. Top five for me were Scottie Scheffler, Tom Kim, Tom Hoge, Xander Schauffele. Obviously, that's based on all the data and everything. So we'll see what happens there. And Tony Finau. Cantlay right below them.
I like Xander, and I think we kind of saw it with Xander in the outright market. I wrote about this in the Discord chat over at RotoBaller, but Xander opened at 25-1. And one of the first things I put on Monday morning is that price is never going to last. That got enhanced just because of all the concerns around him. You know, I'm very interested to see where his DFS ownership ends up coming in over these next few days, because there is a contrarian route with him where the course, at least hypothetically, when you look at it, sets up really nicely for him.
Oh, it'd be perfect. But yeah, I don't know if I'm going to take the risk there, but I can't do the withdrawal thing. I hate it.
I just think he wouldn't be here if he wasn't actually prepared to play.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Let's see. See what happens. I mean, we got till tomorrow for him to probably, I think he'll at least withdraw this week before he plays, if that makes sense. I think he'd back out before it happens, or if he goes, he's going to go. But yeah, it would be a fantastic course for him, according to my numbers. Obviously, he's way up there, but yeah.
I know he started at the Century, but I think that was such a different situation to where it wasn't a shock when he pulled out of the tournament. Everything went south. Like, we talked about him a little bit on the show, that show on Tuesday. I think we kind of liked them. And then as soon as that information came out, I was just 100% out. And I'm sure you were the same way on it. But it's yeah. it's a little different here. I'm curious to see as we get more information on him over the next 24 hours.
Yep, 100%. I'm with you.
So, Nick, before we jump into going through these ranges, or maybe we can throw it in the end, whichever way you think is better to do this, I think we should add a little bit good chalk, bad chalk to this of some of the players that have a lot of ownership. We can use some of your numbers. We can use some of my numbers. We can figure out if we think the player is good chalk or bad chalk. Would you want to do that now, or do you want to throw that in at the end?
No, let's do it now. Yeah, I'll sort by aggregate ownership that I've pulled so far. And all right. First guy, John Rahm. I can't say anything bad about him. I'll probably just not go there because he pretty much, I don't know, when he's 6-1 to win again. So it's like, all right, that was a big red flag at Century Tournament of Champions. And now it's a full field. But if he's 6-1, he's just playing. He's so good. And he was getting hot in the fall, too, which we were talking about right before we kind of went on our bye week break. I mean, he's awesome. And he hits fairways, too.
I'm going to say, I mean, obviously, like, there's a differing amount of ownership in the $10,000 section, but I'm going to say, and this is what makes it so difficult of not starting up there. Like, I agree that you get contrarian once you don't do that, but I almost feel like every single name that you want to talk about in the 10,000s is probably good chalk. It's just, it's hard to find that much to dislike. Like, I guess if you're trying to find a reason not to play Rahm, it would be his weighted proximity from, you know, like those short irons, 100 yards and within 100 to 125 yards. But if you get rid of those two problems, like, my model thinks he's one of the cleanest outputs that you have. Like, even if we, let's say he gets an outlier week, and let's give him, like, I'll change this live on my model right now and see what happens with it. Let's say we give him, I don't know, a top 30 week with his irons in those proximity ranges that I just talked about. He would jump to, I guess he technically jumps up to second, which, I mean, you're paying the top price for him, but it's hard to find anything to dislike. Like, the price seems fine. The upside is obviously there. He's been really good at this tournament historically with 14th, sixth, and first in the last three tries. So I guess I'm going to say good chalk just because he's so difficult to fade at this point.
Yep. It is good chalk. Next guy, Cameron Young. 25% I'm seeing, so right around the same as Rahm, 9,100 DraftKings. I'm probably out.
You know,
I don't play 25% Young. I know he's got tons of win equity, and the price is it's a misprice. That explains the ownership. That's kind of how this thing works for most people. But I don't know. He just doesn't hit fairways. So if I'm gonna die on the hill of I want guys that are long, accurate ball strikers, he does not fit that for me, and I'm not scared of the putter by any means. So I think there's two mediocre parts of his game. The rest is elite of elite. I think I'm good on that ownership, especially let's see who he's priced around to where I could pivot. Give me Aaron Wise over him. I think I like Aaron Wise a ton this week, but for 10% ownership and $100 less, I think I'll go there.
I don't have a problem with that.
Or I'll go up to, like, I know he doesn't hit a ton of fairways either, but if Sam Burns is going to be 10% owned or less than 10%, I think I'd rather go to Sam Burns.
I want nothing, I don't think, to do with Sam Burns this week.
Neither did I, but when I see it, it's like last week, I don't think I was on Jordy at all, and I know you talked about him being great leverage, and on Thursday it just didn't pan out, but I went there for the ownership.
I think if I was going to go there for an ownership route, I think
Sam Burns hasn't. Yeah, he's. I guess the iron play is bad too.
The first name that you mentioned of Aaron Wise, that would probably be where I would pivot to. I think. What do you see for ownership on Zalatoris right now?
High, 20%.
If he's that high, then I mean, I guess technically, and people aren't going to want to hear this, but it's probably Aaron Wise or it's probably Siwoo Kim. I know everybody's off of him after he won last week, but I really like this setup for him.
Yeah, Siwoo looks great for me too. All right, let's go to the next guy. I think I like, well, we'll talk about everybody in the price range. Cantlay, he's perfect. I mean, he's great on Pete Dye courses. I have nothing bad to say about him either.
I just want to read through the numbers that he ranks in my model for all the categories that I looked at this week. And some of these are not necessarily put in as the weight, but when we look at weighted proximity, he's fifth. When we look at off the tee plus approach, he's fourth. He is number one for overall birdie or better percentage. He's number one for weighted par five. He's number two for weighted par four. He is number eight for weighted par three. So he's inside the top 10 in all three of those metrics there. He is the number one player when you combine short courses and easy courses. He is number one when you combine Pete Dye courses and Nicholas designs. I mean, he's not outside of the top 10 or whatever, like whatever the worst number I just read off there. I mean, he's inside like the top 10 in pretty much every single number that you can think of. I know that he's going to be popular, but you see it a little bit with the course history. And the one thing I will say is I think it's the second place finish in 2021. He like catapulted himself up the leaderboard from way down there from a Sunday shoot that he had. So he never really was in contention to win that tournament. So take that for what it's worth. So you might be looking at like two ninth place finishes and something that should have been a little bit worse, but it's like the same thing with Cantlay. I like Scheffler more because of the leverage that he creates in that section. But if you're comparing both of the players together, they're kind of like A and B with me, with John Rahm being right in that mix also.
Yep. All three are, I don't know how to fade any of them, but got to do something. Move on to the next guy. Will Zalatoris. He's fourth for me in ownership.
If Zalatoris's ownership is as high as you just said, I'm less inclined to want to play him. I guess if I was like directly comparing Zalatoris and Cameron Young, I would rather play Zalatoris. So if that means like Cameron Young is just off the board for me, maybe he's going to have to be because of ownership. But I have not made a decision on Zalatoris yet. I know you could make the argument that anytime that you get one of these easier venues, you don't necessarily get the maximum upside of what Zalatoris presents. But to me, that at least seemed like on the surface, it would reduce his ownership. It doesn't seem to be doing that right now. So it kind of adds a bit of a dilemma that my model wasn't seeing, because I only have him at about 14% right now.
Yeah. I mean, either way, 14 to 18 range is doable, I think, for sure. Next guy, first guy in the AK range, Tom Hoagie.
I'm a little bit worried that everybody
is he out. High on yours? I'm out 100%. If he's over 15%, yeah. I'm good. I'm good there for sure. I'm going to take longer ball strikers that are even Adam Hadwin's ownership's up. I'm good on all those guys. Maybe KH Lee I'd go to over them, but we'll go through that in pricing. But yeah, I'm good on him.
I see 18%. He's negative leverage however I run. Like, so if you're looking just very quickly, like if we're looking at the worst ownership leverage of guys from him and up, the worst one would be Andrew Putnam for me. My mom wants nothing to do with Andrew Putnam. And then the second worst would be Tom Hoagie.
Sweet. All right. Let's go through the pricing. And then, I guess if there's punt chalk, like 7K, I'm seeing David Lipsky. 7,300 over 10%. And that's pretty much it. That's like super notable. I think I'd be out on that for sure.
I don't want like Lipsky 60th in my model, 72nd for upside. The 32nd.
There's a guy at the same price I love.
Is it? Let me see if I can guess who this is.
I always love him for what it's worth. He was he was like a 20% owned mid 7K guy going into the Tour Championship, like for three tournaments in a row, everybody was riding him. And he was good too, don't get me wrong. But now I'm seeing 0% ownership projection on him.
Who is it?
Two top 10 finishes in July and August.
My model that doesn't go back that far right now. I mean, I know you always like
7,300.
I know you always like Steven Yeager, but he didn't qualify, so it couldn't be him.
It's not the German Hammer.
I don't know. Tell me.
It's Taylor Moore.
What do you like about Moore this week?
I like everything. He's plenty long. He's accurate. Iron play is good enough for the ownership. That's kind of what I'm not. I did bet an outright on him. 50 to 100 is awesome, and his long irons are good. So it's like for 7,300 and no ownership, what I factored the most, he graded as a positive everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, like the thing is this is kind of contradictory for what I said earlier in this conversation, but you are guaranteed also three rounds of golf from every single player. Now you obviously want to get a 6-6 through and you have leverage on the play. And like, there's a contrarian route that you can take with it, like all the better with it, but you are able to take at least like on the surface, you're able to take more chances on some of these players if you believe you have an edge on them. A lot of the edge for me probably comes in that upper $7,000 range versus what we get in the lower 7,000s. Like I'm running through my model right now. I don't have a ton of players that I am extremely high on. And the ones that I am kind of high on, I think that you have boom or bust nature, maybe too much so with the ownership that you're going to get from them. But I guess let's move up if you want. We'll start with the 10,000s, just run through this very quickly and just go through these ranges fast.
Yeah, my favorite two plays are the two lowest owned guys in that range outside of Xander. We're just not going to talk about them, I guess, until we, unless you want to say something. I feel like we already covered it. I love Fino and I love Scheffler. Obviously, like, there's nothing wrong to say about Cantlay and Rahm, but if their ownership's going to be that high, I think I'll roll the dice that Scheffler and Fino could keep up with them.
I'm going to have to make a decision, I think, with the way that I construct my lineup between Fino and Cantlay. I'm going to play Scheffler. He's my favorite play. I mean, if that naturally means that Rahm kind of has a hard way, like other than playing defense on him, that might have to go with that to where he's more of a defensive play for me. And then I'm going to have to make a decision between Cantlay and Finau before Thursday takes place. If you made me pick right now, I guess I'll take Cantlay based off all the stats that I read. But like you're looking at, it's Patrick Cantlay 1, Scotty Scheffler 2, John Rahm 3, Tony Finau 4. It's the top four players that are the top four price guys. I think they got pricing right this week.
Yep, I think they certainly did. All right, 9K range. We got Aaron Wise, Cam Young, Siwoo Kim, Harmon, Burns, Tom Kim, Willie Z, and Sungjae. I like Sungjae a ton here. I think it's a perfect course. I think after he missed a cut last week, people are kind of let down. I think it's great for him. I think Will Z's ownership is probably a little too high if he's the highest owned guy in this price range. I'll probably bail. Tom Kim, I don't know, man. His iron play was so good last week, but his putting was terrible. Little concern there. And I believe you and I kind of said we don't like to use him when we think distance means a lot. So I'll probably fade there. And I don't know if there's any mental aspect of the game or anything like that. Like if the missing six footers left and right are in his head, I think I'm good on playing Tom Kim. If he's high owned, if he's like 10%, of course, I'll play it. I didn't like Sam Burns, like nothing in the numbers say to play Sam Burns, but historically he is a really good long iron player, an extremely good short game player. Those numbers, if your sample size is small, are not going to look that great. But if he's 10% or lower, he's got win equity. He's a guy that could absolutely rain putts. So I'll take that upside, I think, that boom or bust, if you want to call Sam Burns boom or bust. I'm in there just because I'm not going to play Brian Harman. I'd rather have Sam Burns, like the win equity of Sam Burns, over Brian Harman. Brian Harman's a cut maker. I think that's kind of all he is how I look at him, and I'm not paying $9,300 for a cut maker. And then Cam Young, we talked about his ownership. I really like Aaron Wise. So favorites in this group for me, DFS-wise, would be Sungjae for sure, number one. Number two, probably Aaron Wise. Number three, probably Sam Burns. And then I'll definitely go back to Siwoo for sure. I'm not going to leave him when his game's at, you know, arguably, he's got to be super confident, especially last week. He seemed to never miss a beat, especially hitting that approach out of the bunker too on 18. I'm ready. Siwoo, let's go. If people are just going to leave him, I'm in.
You threw me off a little bit with Zalatoris with the ownership that you gave me there. Like that's going to be something that I monitor over the next day. So
yeah, I'm early too. So
yeah, we'll see what happens there. To me, I'm going to throw this out on the show, and we kind of already see it with pricing right now. And I think I've probably said it before on the show in the past. I think Aaron Wise is this year's Sam Burns. I think that that's what we're going to get from. I think you're going to get multiple victories in the season. I think you're going to get some high end performances. If you're telling me that I'm going to try to create leverage in this range, I would rather do it with Aaron Wise than going the Sam Burns route with it. I think we could look back on this in 6 months and we all of a sudden realize that Wise not only belonged in this range, but should have been much higher owned. So Wise and Siwoo Kim would be my two favorites. And then Sungjae is very interesting to me. So this is an excellent bounce back spot for him. The one thing that I had a concern with is my model did notice this alarming trend with his approach numbers. So during the last 20 times that he has started a new streak of losing strokes with his irons, something that he did by dropping 2.7 to the field at Wailea, we have seen that continue downward 15 times in one of his two subsequent starts. Now, I'm not a trends person, but that's not a trend at that point. That means to me that when Sungjae loses control with his irons, you see it take ramification one of the next two starts. Like, he doesn't quite fix the situation. I think that's why he strings together success as well as he does. Also, now, look, I mean, there's four top 12 finishes in his career at this tournament. I do think he has a better floor in this event than we saw last week. There were some red flags when we ran it for last week's tournament. Like, I obviously liked them a lot, and I liked them more than you did. But I think that I would like to know where his ownership is tomorrow before I decide one way or another. Because if you're telling me I can get a contrarian version of him, I'm in. I will take the chance. But if you're telling me he's going to be popular, I'd probably rather pivot to like a wiser Siwoo type player.
For sure. I think I would agree with that 100%. And for whatever it's worth, it looks like he's a sizable dog right now to Will Zalatoris in matchups over at Pinnacle. So keep that in mind. 8K range. Need your opinion. I know we both love, I think you love Taylor Pendrith, right? If I know correctly.
I love Taylor Pendrith this week. I know he's an underdog to most people in matchups, but kind of willing to trust my model there.
Yeah, and so is Cameron Young to open the market at the Century Tournament Champions, and you and I didn't understand that either. And then that seemed to correct itself. So it is early in the marketplace. But yeah, I like Taylor Pendrith a ton. Wyndham Clark, I probably just don't ever play Wyndham Clark. So I'd like your thoughts on him. Adam Hadwin being one of the highest owned guys in the 8K range. I think you guys can have that. I'd rather have KH Lee or Pendrith for cheaper. Oh, Poston as well. I think Poston's fine.
I like
fine.
Poston a lot.
Yep. I think Poston's fine. Tom Hoagie, I'm out. Sahith Sagala, I butcher his name every time. I think I'm out. Andrew Putnam, I'm 1,000,000% out. Cam Davis, TBD. Taylor Montgomery, what do we do? Like, he doesn't hit fairways with the driver. He was better last week because he had to hit a lot of less than driver. I don't think guys will do that this week because of the par fives, and you got to get a little bit more aggressive and get position off the tee. I don't know. The dude's just a walking top 20 in any tour that he goes to, so I don't know. I don't know what to do.
I'm going to give the same answer that I gave in the $9,000 range just because we're in, like, pretty much, I mean, it's $100 less there. I would just rather get Darren Wise.
Cool. All right. That's what I'm going to do. Taylor Montgomery out. Thoughts on Cam Davis?
Oh, man. My model adored him this week. It liked
everything. I think he's a guy that wins a couple times this year, too.
I think Cameron Davis is another one of those players that has immense upside. So, look,
I like him at Augusta this year.
Yeah, he should be able to use his distance very well there, the wide open feel of it. I don't know. I know I see 21% right now on him. Like, that's the highest owned person in my model. I don't love that. I think it probably continues to come down. Like, I've written this week, I think we see this, and I don't know, you can tell me what you have. I think we eventually 15. See this at like 17% when everything closes with this. And if you're telling me he's going to be like 15 to 17%, I don't know if I can ignore this. He's one of six players in my model that graded inside the top 30 in every single way that I ran all the stats this week. And, like, I mean, that's placing him with a lot of the big guns of this tournament. Like, just to, I have the names in front of me, so I'll quickly run through them. That would be Patrick Cantlay, Scottie Scheffler, Tony Finau, Sungjae Im, Siwoo Kim, and then Cameron Davis.
Yeah, and he's great on die courses too, isn't he?
He is, and his weighted proximity is just phenomenal.
Yeah, tough to fade that. I hope it goes in the 15,000 range, 15% range. Damn it! I think we're both out on Tom Hoagie. You seem to like Thigala.
I like Thigala's ownership. If I see 6% right now, what do you have?
Yeah, 8.
If you're telling me we can get him at sub 10%. You know, I don't know if I necessarily trust his accuracy off the tee. That could come and bite him a little bit, but there's better win equity on him, in my opinion, than a lot of the guys that we get in this range. Like, if we're looking for tangible win equity, in my opinion, it probably comes from Pendrith, Thigala, and Cam Davis would probably be the three for me. I think JT Poston had some sort of, I mean, I don't know if I necessarily think he wins this tournament, but I could see a top 20 finish from him. And, you know, at the 10% ownership rate, I think that would work. I think you made a good point about Hadwin when we talk about ownership there. Hadwin's essentially a worse version, but the same version of like Brian Harman in the 9,000s. There's just such a lack of win equity at the end of the day that it makes it difficult trying. Like, I think he's going to come in the top 40, but I'm okay with that if he comes in like 32nd place and I'd rather shoot for the moon on somebody like Thegola at half the ownership, or even better yet, Pendrith, who I see at sub 6% right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right. The range you, I know you want to talk about. 7K, I mean, there's so many guys, so let's just take out a couple. Start at the top. I love Jason Day. It's Pete Dye. It's long, accurate ball strikers is what I'm looking for. Does the layoff help him or hurt him? The dude was a ball striking machine to end the year last year. The iron play was finally getting there. And I know he got cut at the RSM. He probably couldn't have played worse there. But you said it best. It was very cold there. It's not a good environment for his back. And you were dead on. Before that, he had four straight top 25 finishes.
I'm going to say that it probably hurts him. I think if directly comparing, like if we do the same thing that we did with Wise a second ago, I'd probably rather play JT Poston than Jason Day. That doesn't mean that I dislike him. I mean, he's very, very slightly negative in my model. He's just outside the top 30. Usually, like if we're looking at players at 7,900 or up, I would like them to be in the top 30 for me to really start considering them for any massive amount of ownership. I mean, he's 33rd. He's 25th for safety. There are, it's not like I see red flags with him like I would on certain other players, but I don't know if I'm as high on him as you are this week, which maybe that's what he needs to win a golf tournament.
All right. I'm in. Ricky Fowler. And Justin Rose, you got any love for those guys, 7,900?
My model loves Justin Rose. I'm probably not going to go there. I've never gotten him right one time in 5 years of playing him. And I do like Ricky Fowler. So I took Ricky Fowler to come top 40 at plus 160. I think it's a really good course fit for him. I think anytime that you get water on these courses and he can use some of that total driving of his, it kind of works out well. And the other name that I'll just throw out there that I've seen a lot of sharp movement take place in the market over the last 5 or 6 hours would be Keith Mitchell at 7,800. Yes. And that's a 3% guy. If you really want to look for, you know, I don't know if I want to say necessarily that he has win equity here, but I think he has top 10 equity at, you know, at the very minimum of what we're looking at. It doesn't mean that he necessarily achieves that, but the total driving is great. That should be a part of his game that he can take advantage of if he really is hitting the ball straight this week. So he would probably, it'd probably be him, Fowler. I mean, if we're looking from like 77 and up, it's probably him and Fowler for me. That would be my two favorite plays.
Okay. Yeah. I absolutely love Keith Mitchell this week for DFS. I think I got an outright on too. 7K range. The rest is kind of like meh for me. Numbers seem to think Sebastian Munoz could play well here, but his form was not good to end the year, so we'll see. But yeah, Taylor Moore is going to be my low-owned guy that I probably go to like 20, 30, 40% on. If he's going to be 0-1, I'm going to take a stand on Taylor Moore, because usually like the weeks I get that right are the biggest weeks I have. Like when it was the Scottish Open, I think I went crazy high on Chris Kirk, and he was like 1% owned, almost won the damn thing, blew it on Sunday. And Tom Kim, I think – I don't want to say it, but I kind of invented Tom Kim and DFS, I feel like, because I went very heavy on him back when his name was Ju Young. And I couldn't pronounce that. And who was it? I guess who let me down at the obviously DJ did at the Open itself, but I was super high on Russ Henley. He was like 2% owned and he fell apart on Sunday. Yeah. But like I love going super heavy overweight on a sub 5% guy, if not even lower. And Taylor Moore is probably going to be that for me this week.
The player for me would probably be Harris English. I have him just in the sub 5% range. And I feel like we've been, maybe the two of us specifically, and also Roberto, when we do the show with him on Links and Locks, I feel like that's a name that we bring up quite often. And I haven't necessarily been as high. This is the week that I'm going to jump into the mix with him. So top 10 in my model, when I look at some of the weighted proximity totals, I know that's the one thing that we always said, as soon as he could get his irons back right, I think that's when he'll start making a run again. He's inside the top 20 of my model in every single iteration of how I ran it. So Harris English is going to be my sneaky play in the $7,000 range. I probably will also go back to Emiliano Grillo. He absolutely burned me last week in every single fashion of the way in any market that I played him in, but I'm willing to go back there. I also see sub 5%. And then it's kind of a gross range for me after that. Like my model seems to like Alex Smalley, but I'm not paying, I'm not going to go to the 11% Alex Smalley route. I would rather play him as a top 40, probably. Like, I think there's other ways to get exposure than to get stuck with some of his volatility.
Any love for Matthew Neesmith?
I do. Neesmith was another guy. Like, if we're trying to find random guys in the lower $7,000 range. So if we go from, I guess, 7,300 and down, Neesmith would be the highest ranked player I had in my model. And the one thing that I liked about him the most is my model actually liked the upside that he presented for this tournament, which I don't know if I love, like, I don't know what ownership you see right now. I see 9%. I think if he starts creeping into like the, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15% range, I will be out then. But if you can tell me he's going to be sub 10%, he's probably one of the few spots in that lower $7,000 range where I am fine going.
All right. One 6K guy that you like, and then we'll get to the card and get out of here.
This is gross, but I guess give me Stuart Sink at 6,800.
Okay. I played a lot of him last week. That was good for a couple days. I'm going to my guy that I warn people on Twitter about. It's not Tiger Woods, but it's Taiga Semikawa. Number one amateur in the world. Already has two professional wins. When he was in college, I believe he won twice on the Japan Tour. Guy's long, too. He's a little dude, but he's driving distance. I guess if it were to transfer over to the PGA, he'd be above average. Was awesome last week. Besides Sunday, his ball striking could not have been worse. So not really sure what went on there. But if he's going to be 0%, I'm going to take the pedigree and the talent that I did. I was trying to watch him as much as possible, but really didn't get a whole lot of TV coverage. So it was mainly the shot tracker and everything. But I like him. So I'm just going to go with my gut, and he'll be this year's Chan Kim, I guess, for now. But he probably won't play on the PGA much. I think he's just on sponsor exemption again. So Semikawa for me, 0%, 6,300.
Do you have any betting exposure to him?
Yeah, I bet him at 600-1 to win, but that was throwing money away.
Do you want to very quickly run me
through? Also, I do have him top 40 on FanDuel at plus 420. So
actually, let's condense it this week, Nick. Give me one or two of your favorite outrights. Give me a handful of your outrights that you have this week, I guess. And then if you have any matchups or anything else.
Yeah. So I'll give you my two top 40s is Taylor Moore top 40 at plus 240 and Semikawa plus 420, both on FanDuel. My favorite outright ticket is Keith Mitchell at 100-1. You can still get that at points bet. And I guess Aaron Wise 50-1. Bet MGM is the best price in Illinois on Aaron Wise.
I like that. And I will give one play on here. So I took Siwoo Kim plus 100 over Andrew Putnam. That would be love on that. DraftKings. I also, just to throw it out there, took Keith Mitchell to be first round leader on the course that he's playing. So there's a random outlier type bet if you're trying to find exposure in that market. But, you know, it's funny with Keith Mitchell. I've seen him as low at some of the sharper books as like 50-1 to win this tournament. And yeah, I couldn't get there. I couldn't get there myself, but I think 100-1 is exactly what you're looking for. Like, there is realistic win equity at a price that is higher than it should be at the bare minimum.
Yeah. Other than that, the other tickets I have are Jason Day, Tony Finau, and then, like I said, I'm going to keep a lot reserved because I just don't like this tournament. Hence why I only have two top 40s. That's the shortest card I've had in quite some time, but they're long shots. So there we go. You got any thoughts on Smalley over Lipsky on DraftKings minus 110?
I mean, I like it because I want to try to fade Lipsky. I don't know if I necessarily trust Smalley, but I did have value in that number. That was something that I highly considered.
I was the same way until, you know, it's a three round factor for me. I like his chances to get it done if it's three rounds, not two.
Well, maybe if you add it, maybe I'll add it with you. Cause I technically did have value, and Lipsky's like one of, you know, three or four golfers that I'm trying to find a matchup against. So
go with our boy Smalley. He lets us down all the time, but let's go back to it.
All right. Well, it's to be decided for me, but I probably will add it. we'll talk about it later, but Nick, let everybody know where they can find you.
Yeah, at Sticks Picks, STIXPICKS. And I think I'm excited for the DFS slate more than I am the betting slate this week, for sure.
I would agree with that. And you can find me at Tee Off Sports. You can get my weekly model over at Rotoballer if you have not signed up for that yet. And we will be back for one of my favorite tournaments of the year next week at the Farmers Insurance Open. So good luck to everyone wagering money at the American Express. And we will see you guys here next Tuesday.